This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Later in the hour, a look at changes in drug policy legislation across the country and what the presidential transition means for COVID-19 response. But first, November has been a month so far, right? A presidential election with days of waiting for results, a Biden administration working to transition, even as Republicans have refused to concede, and I'm sorry to say, worsening news about the pandemic. COVID-19 is increasing in every state of the union, and this week, hospitalizations reached a record unseen any time previously in this pandemic. And as of yesterday, 67,000 people were in the hospital. Hospital systems overwhelmed or on the brink. We also have record deaths each day. To put that in perspective, there are more American deaths now, topping that of Vietnam and Korean Wars combined. For more about COVID and other science news of the week, Amy Nordrum, an editor for MIT Technology Review, joins us. Happy Friday the 13th, Amy.
Thank you, Ira. Good to be here.
Okay, let's get right into some of these questions. We pretty much have to start with COVID-19. The numbers are grim. Even New York, which was so hard hit in the spring, is putting back some restrictions this week as percentages rise. Okay, get into how bad is it getting?
Well, the pandemic is worse than it's ever been here in the United States. Yesterday set a new record for both daily new cases and hospitalizations. And it's higher now than it was in either of the previous peaks that we saw earlier this year in April and July. Yesterday, we had more than 152,000 new cases of COVID reported in the United States. And at this point, we've had more than 100,000 new cases a day for more than a week. And unfortunately, we'll see how today goes, but that number has just continued to tick up and up. Now, this peak that we're in now is expected to last longer, and it's also complicated by the fact that it's now occurring during flu season and also potentially during the holidays when many people are accustomed to traveling and getting together with family and friends. So, you know, the actions of individuals will really matter here in the next few weeks to see whether we can turn this around and to get those case counts down.
And people are wondering how to do that at the moment, because basically nothing is successfully slowing it down, is it?
Yeah, there's a new round of orders being issued this week, stay-at-home advisories issued by Chicago's mayor and by Wisconsin's governor. So a lot of the things that we've been doing, it's important to keep continuing to do, wearing masks and staying home as much as possible and, you know, keeping your distance from others when you do go out. But unfortunately, these numbers we're facing this week are really grim.
And there is some beacon of hope, right? President-elect Joe Biden has already named a task force for tackling the pandemic. We've gotten some good news on the vaccine front, too. So,
yes, that's right. Pfizer this week did release promising preliminary data for its vaccine. And that was encouraging not just for Pfizer, but also for companies like Moderna that are making a similar kind of vaccine, what's called a gene vaccine. This type hasn't ever been approved before for use in humans. So the fact that this early data is looking good is really exciting. But, you know, it is still preliminary. It needs to be checked out by other experts, and it'll still be months before any vaccine is widely available to the public.
And we're going to talk more about Biden's A-team task force later in the hour and then get some great detail on that. Speaking of President-elect Biden, after a long, tense week last week, he is the president-elect, which has other implications for science policy in the country, right? Especially the climate crisis.
Yeah, that's right. It's been less than a week since his election was projected, confirmed, and he's already released his administration with Vice President-elect Harris has already released a transition plan that spells out a number of movements that they plan to make on climate change, including a plan to achieve net zero emissions by 2050 nationwide. It's a really ambitious goal. He's promised federal investment of $1.7 trillion over the next 10 years into clean energy and environmental justice efforts. And he said he'll recommit to the Paris Agreement, which the U.S. formally withdrew from last week. So this is a big change from the Trump administration. And there's a lot that environmentalists and scientists are looking forward to about this.
You know, Amy, I'm really glad you're here because I'm struggling to find time to talk about other science news about, well, anything but the coronavirus or the election week. And let's talk about some science marches on in the world stories, including an exciting new rollout of something called Internet over the Air in Kenya. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, Alphabet gave a really interesting update this week about its efforts to deliver high-speed broadband internet service over the air. This is not a technology that they invented, but it is interesting to see a big tech company invest in this and really take it to the point of actually implementing it in the real world across a real commercial network. So they've partnered with a telco provider in Kenya to roll out this technology, and it basically delivers broadband internet by beaming light through the air rather than through the fiber optic cables that we're typically accustomed to. And this approach, if it works and can be deployed widely, that would reduce infrastructure costs of creating a new wireless network, bringing the internet to new places, and it would make it easier to reconfigure networks on the fly and change them as demand changes on the ground.
Okay, now, every technology has some downside to it. Are there any negatives about this?
Yeah, I mean, since it's a beam of light, there's some serious limitations to what it can do. So it can't go around corners. It can't go through walls or buildings like a Wi-Fi signal can. You have to have what's called line of sight. So it has to have a clear shot from one place to another. The transmitter and the receiver have to be, you know, unobstructed, basically have a clear path through the air. So that's a limitation because you can imagine a number of places where that might not work out. And things like rain or fog have been shown previously in other research to sometimes interfere with these kinds of networks. So there will be some limitations that Alphabet and its partners will need to work around if they want to deploy this technology, but it could work well in some situations where it's just, you know, you can imagine a community on a mountainside or across a river. It's just expensive and difficult to dig that up and lay fiber there to small villages or homes. So I think this could make a difference, and it won't replace fiber optics, but it could complement the technology and be a new option for a lot of people.
Yeah, I want to talk about a different technology story, and this one was really interesting. A 1,000-year-old water purification system that was very advanced. Tell me about that one.
Yes, this is so interesting. There's an ancient Mayan community called Tikal. It was a city that lasted more than 1,000 years. It's what is now located in what is now northern Guatemala. And a researcher at the University of Cincinnati, Kenneth Tankersley, found that this community had a really advanced water filtration system, and it's the oldest system of its kind to be found in the Western Hemisphere. So we knew this kind of filtration was happening in Europe and in Asia, but now we know also that it was happening here, and the Mayans were very technologically advanced in that regard. So Mayans have a rainy season and a dry season to contend with. And they built these large reservoirs to store water for the dry season. And what these researchers found was that one of them was a lot cleaner than the others. And when they examined sediment from that reservoir, they found that the materials there called zeolite that are known to filter out microbes and heavy metals from water. And the zeolite didn't naturally occur in that location. So they knew that it was deliberately brought there to serve as a water filtration mechanism.
So they trucked it in from other, volcanic areas to throw it into the water and kill the microbes.
Yeah, they would collect it from an area where they may have noticed that the water tasted a little bit better. It is a mineral compound found in volcanic ash, and so they would have needed to carry it, transport it to their water filtration system. And the structure of zeolite, it's crystals composed of silicon and aluminum, and that structure is very useful in that it allows the mineral to capture microbes and heavy metals and hold them in place. And so it was a pretty effective water filtration method. And in fact, it's still used today in some commercial bottling. And we can synthesize this material now instead of just, you know, taking it from volcanic ash. So a really, really neat use of technology very early on that we're still using today.
You know, it's just another instance where we don't give the Mayans enough credit for how advanced they did some of these things. Let's move on to another story about birds. They're migrating south right now, and we should maybe take a look at their plumage when we see them, right? Cool story?
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, billions of birds are migrating south for the winter, and a lot of them undergo a molt before or after they fly. So when they molt, they lose their feathers, they replace them with new feathers, and a lot of them molt again when they're ready to return or shortly after they return. And researchers at Michigan Technological University and Occidental College reported recently that Their study showed the further birds plan to fly, the more feathers they replace in these molts. And that's an interesting relationship because some scientists had thought before that the molt was related to breeding. So, you know, they molt to have more colorful feathers that might help them attract a mate. But this research shows that, you know, that might also be kind of a secondary effect. But the primary driver, the reason that these birds are molting and that it coincides with their migration is because they're trying to renew their feathers and replace them with better feathers because, you know, molting actually helps them do that. And flying for such far distances takes some wear and tear on the feathers that they do have.
And lastly, we have one electronic nose story that can help you identify spoiled meat. Tell us. Please.
Yeah, there's a research team in Singapore. They built kind of a clever, they call it electronic nose. It's basically a sensor system. And it involves placing a barcode or a piece of paper that inside of a packaging of meat or fish sold at a deli. And by looking at that barcode, the barcode's made of sugar and dyes, and they change color in response to gases given off by the meat as it decays. And so if you point your smartphone at that barcode, you know, their system uses an app powered by AI to recognize the colors on the barcode. And that would, in theory, allow a shopper to tell which cut of meat is the freshest and whether the meat that they're looking at, you know, is fresh or not. So there's been a lot of these kinds of electronic noses built before, but this is a particularly clever system. And, you know, who knows, one day it could make it out of the lab and could help shoppers choose the best meats from the deli.
I'm picturing a meat tricorder, like from Star Trek, you know. You wave it over the meat and tells you something about it. Interesting story and great palate cleansing news from you today.
Thanks so much, Ira.
Thank you. Amy Nordstrom, editor for the MIT Technology Review.